Thank you so much, Heidi, and welcome everyone to the HSR&D Winter 2023 RFA Seminar. As Heidi just said, I'm Tiffin Ross Shepherd, the Scientific Merit Review Board Program Manager, and with me today are Scientific Program Managers Kathy Plowsick, Bob O'Brien, Crystal Henderson, Kevin Chaney, Lynn Padgett, and Amanda Borski. We would like to thank you for taking the time today to learn about the HSR&D RFAs. As we are getting started, we would like to get an idea about our audience. Next slide. So one of our first poll questions we would like to know is, have you ever applied or contributed to an application for HSR&D funding? Heidi?
And that poll question is open up on the right-hand side of your screen. There are two poll questions open. We're just working on the top one right now. Have you ever applied or contributed to an application for HSR&D and funding? And we'll let that go for just another moment here. I do have responses coming in. And right now we're seeing about 80% of the audience saying that yes, they have, and 20% no, have not.
Great. Well, thank you for those of you who have participated or contributed or applied to a funding before. And to the new people, welcome. We hope that this seminar gives you some information that will help you. Our next question is, we would like to know your role in the VA. Is it an investigator, a coordinator, project manager, or analyst, an ACOS, AO, or researcher leadership, an award administrator, or something else? Heidi, I'll let you open the poll.
Right, that poll is open on the right-hand side. A lot of you got a jump start on that one, but responses look like they are still coming in. So we'll give everyone just a few more moments to respond before we close that out and move on with the session here. And it looks like we have slowed down here. We're seeing about 32% saying investigator, about 40% saying coordinator, project manager, analyst, about 18% ACOS, AO, or research leadership, 10% award administrator, and 25% other. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Heidi. This is really helpful for us to get an idea of who we're speaking to today. So you'll receive additional information about some of these later during the seminar, but what's new this cycle? First is the HSR&D priorities document has been updated. The most recent version is dated September 2022. Just a heads up, if you click on the hyperlink in any of the RFAs where it has the priorities document link hyperlinked, and it takes you to a priorities document dated March 2022, please clear your cache and then try opening the page again. It should be dated September 2022. That's the news version. We've also added additional guidance and requirements for letters of support in our RFAs. This cycle, we have a new rural health RFA, which you'll hear about. And lastly, we have discontinued the pandemic-related disrupted and deferred care RFA. At this point, I'll turn it over to Kathy.
Thank you, Tiffin. So this year, we have a new legislative priority of the PACT Act that was added to our legislative priorities of the Mission Act, the Comprehensive Addiction and Recovery Act, CARA, the CARES Act, the Foundation for Evidence-Based Policymaking Act, and the Hannon Act. We are retaining our cross-cutting HSR&D methods of implementation science for the complexity science and health systems engineering and data measurement science. The ORD-wide research priorities of expanded veteran access to high-quality clinical trials, increased substantial real-world impact of VA research, putting VA data to work for veterans, actively promoting equity and inclusion within our sphere of influence, in optimizing VA research enterprises are continued, and these have not changed. HSR&D has added 3 new HSR&D priorities this cycle. They are emergency medicine, rural health, and COVID. We continue to include the priorities of suicide prevention, mental health, including PTSD, access to care, long-term care and aging, substance use disorders, including opioid misuse and stimulus use disorders and pain management, healthcare, informatics, and HR modernization, including measurement and information science, women's health, population health and whole health, healthcare value, quality and safety of health, and health equity and social determinants of health, primary care and complex chronic disease management, virtual care and telehealth, and our disabilities, including spinal cord injury and traumatic brain injury, focused on the health system issues. Next slide, please. For all of our RFAs, we want you to consider eligibility of the investigator. For the PI, they need an MD, PhD, or an equivalent degree, doctoral degree, in medical, biological, or behavioral field, science field. They need to have a VA paid appointment of at least 25 hours per week, which is a 5/8 FTE, in place before funding can begin. If a director, a director must confirm that commitment for a 5/8 if funded, if they are not, if the individual is currently not 5/8, they can also request a waiver, which we'll discuss a little bit later on. And the investigator has to be at a medical center with an active research program, and the individual needs to be registered and in ePromise, and the medical center must be registered as an applicant organization in grants.gov and RE Commons. Next slide. For co-investigators, a site PI has to meet the same qualifications as the PI and be registered in ePromise at their current site. If you are including co-investigators that are non-VA, they would also need to have an MD PhD equivalent to be served in that role, but and they can be discussed as such in the application, but in the budget, they cannot be listed as a co-investigator. On the budget forms, they need to be reflected either as an IPA, if that agreement's in place, or as a consultant to receive funds. And if they are providing researches through a contract, that all that cost of the contract has to be included under the all other expenses. And if you have collaborators that are outside the U.S., they can only serve as unpaid consultants. Next slide. So for waivers, there are a number of waivers. One is the non-veteran enrollment waiver. That is for any non-veterans that will be as part of the research study in the project, and that would include employees. You would only need to complete that if you are awarded. So you don't need to worry about that during the application process, but you need to consider that would be considered part of the JIT process. For eligibility waivers, we have eligibility waivers for PI eligibility, for AIDS, for we also have waivers for exceeding their duration or the budget cap, offsite research, exceeding the IPA percentage of the budget, and also in rare cases, if a resubmission. The deadline for waivers are November 10th, and a copy of the approval from HSR&D needs to be included in the support section, letters of support section of the application. If they're missing, it's considered a fatal error. Next slide, please. So just as a reminder that HSR&D no longer requires quotes from the CTSP transcription service. If you decide you want to use CTSP for transcription, you just need to follow the directions in the RFA so that funds can be transferred. There is a mandatory requirement that you complete the involved personnel and any collaborators in the spreadsheet in ART. This is a fatal error if not completed. This list has to include all of the named personnel and collaborators that in your application. And this, the period to do this is between November 15th and December 14th. And it is important that you include everyone in this list, including the PI, so that, you know, everyone is there. If the person is named in the application, they need to be listed. So, okay, so for the letters of support, there is a mandatory requirement that the director's letter must include language supporting protected time for clinician researchers. New this round, you're also requiring a table of contents for the letters of support. That table of contents should include each letter writer's name, position, and the office or institution that they are representing. We strongly suggest, in addition, that electronic signatures are used on the by the letter writer for their letters of support. This is and we ask that you ask your letter writers to use an electronic signatures for your request. This is to avoid any kind of issues with folks not saying that they didn't write letters. Next slide, please. So if a group of individuals are from the same institution, such as your co-investigators, it is very acceptable to have one letter and have multiple investigators sign it. If a letter is more than a year old, it's no longer valid, but if it was written within a year, then that's perfectly acceptable. Okay, so I'm going to turn this now over to Kevin.
Thanks, Kathy. Some information regarding the current Oracle Cerner transition that the VA is currently going through, and I'm sure those of you on the call are well aware and affiliated potentially with coins that have either, you know, have started that process or are in preparations. And so, again, obviously, it's important to, you know, kind of remember that this is and can have an impact on your research, and it's important to kind of take a look at what your research plans are going to be. And if you have any questions, to please email the ORD EHRM work group, and we've got the link here on the slide. But there's also resource links, updates, and FAQs that can be found on the EHRM and research page of the Research Resource Guide, RRG. Regarding the EHRM related research methods, please contact our VA coordinating hub to promote research optimizing veteran-centric EHR networks, or PROVEN, at provenhub@va.gov. For administrative purposes, your proposals should discuss possible ways you could mitigate the effects of any data disruption. And again, and looking at what other contingency plans that you might need to have in place, in which, again, our reviewers will be looking for. And so it'll be important for you to, you know, include that information. And again, just to kind of look at ways that we can mitigate the effects of data disruption over the next couple of years based on site plan rollout activities. Okay, next slide. And then for items related to COVID-19, and if you have questions, please see our Office of Research and Development COVID-19 programs and status, and we've got the link here to the SharePoint. And if you have any direct questions as it relates to COVID-19 and perhaps how it may or may not be impacting your research, please direct those to ordcovid19@va.gov. And I think now I'm turning it over to Tiffin.
Thanks, Kevin. So the intent to submit window opening date is Friday, October 21st, and the window closes Friday, November 4th. So it's 2 weeks. The link to ART is on this slide. And ITS is required for all applications submitted through grants.gov each cycle. So I'll repeat that. You have to submit an ITS each cycle. So if you submitted one for summer 22, you still must submit one for winter 23. HSRD uses ITS to determine panels. So an abstract that describes the project will assist in the assignment. So the more details, the better. Please include all the sites and personnel in the ITS. Please note that you will have an opportunity to update the list when you submit your application. Career development awards must have an approved letter of intent or one under review to submit an ITS. Kathy discussed this a little bit, but I'm going to go into more detail about the involved personnel and collaborators' information that we need to collect in ART. We started this mandatory requirement 2 cycles ago that all named personnel in an application must be entered into ART. Failure to include all named individuals will be considered a fatal error. Just to give some background, we started this requirement because in the past, the information was listed in the research and related senior key person profile expanded form in your application when you uploaded it, submitted it into grants.gov. But now ERA requires that anyone listed on that form must have an ERA Commons ID and or username. So many individuals you may have listed on that form may not have an ERA Commons ID. So this is a workaround for us to capture the information without the hassle of you having to obtain an ERA Commons ID for everyone listed in your project. We use the list to help with identifying potential conflicts when recruiting and assigning reviewers to applications. Again, ART will open the involved personnel window on November 15th, and it closes on December 14th to allow updates to the involved personnel. Again, no application will be accepted for review if the involved personnel list is not submitted this cycle. Just as Kathy had mentioned this earlier, but I'll repeat, you need to complete for each named individual their name, degree if appropriate, role on the project, VA facility or community-based outpatient center if applicable, and or their academic or non-VA organization, as well as the city and state. If someone is in the references, they do not need to be included in this. One thing I do want to reiterate, and I think Kathy said this as well, please, the PI's name should also be on this list. So please make sure that the list does include the PI. If you submitted an ITS last cycle and completed an IPS list, the information will transfer over this cycle if you're resubmitting your ITS, but you will need to edit, review, and still submit it between November 15th and the December 14th window. So The information will be in there, but if you have different investigators or partners in it, you'll need to delete those and update accordingly and submit. Now, I believe I will turn it over to Amanda.
Terrific. Thank you, Tiffin. So I want to just remind everyone the importance of reading the RFA instructions. There is a lot of very valuable guidance. And one area to highlight is the abstract. And this is an area that we see a lot of investigators where they're not following it. In the abstract, there is a specific format that should be followed. And we ask that folks follow that in terms of their application. Next slide. While all sections of the RFA are important, there are a couple notable sections I just want to highlight. And the first is on veterans engagement. And this is something that's very important to HSR&D. As you know, the work that we're funding is designed to improve the health of veterans. So getting their input into your study is critical. Veterans can provide very valuable input throughout the research process, from study design, development, recruitment, outcome assessment, a lot of different areas that they can provide input on. And we ask that you do that. Again, it will help make the research results more meaningful and more impactful to actually including improving their health. There's a lot of different ways you can incorporate veterans. You can use veteran engagement panels, veteran advisory boards, a lot of innovative methods, and we encourage you to think about doing that. And for pilots or smaller studies, you can even do a more of a methods base to try to look at ways of advancing engagement of veteran research. So we definitely encourage to consider that. Next slide. Another very important section about in the RFA is on recruitment. We find that a large number of studies have challenges with their recruitment goals. And so reviewers are going to be paying attention to this. You need to explain how you've derived your estimate. You need to check for competing studies for that population at the sites you're looking at. You need to propose mitigation strategies and have a plan B in place. We know there always will be challenges with recruitment. And so just definitely something to really think through and talk about your mitigation strategies, what you would do as alternative options so that way you can complete the study as planned. Next slide. Having a strong implementation and dissemination plan is really critical. Again, HSR&D funds research to improve the care of veterans. And so the research needs to go from a research stage to actually being used to change practice and policy. So simply disseminating study results in a manuscript is not sufficient. It is important and we recognize that, but that alone is not sufficient. So in your implementation and dissemination plans, we ask that you make sure you specifically discuss what steps are you going to take after the project is going to be completed. You need to think about sustainability. Who owns this problem? You need to involve that person in your study. They need to see value in it, and they need to have thoughts on how you could work with them to actually sustain the study, the project of whatever your focus is. Letters of support, as we've already talked about, are really critical and part of that sustainability piece. But again, this is something that the reviewers specifically look at and HSR&D very much focuses on as well. When you're thinking about research designs, we do encourage the use of hybrid studies where you can collect information relevant to implementation as well as effectiveness and efficacy. And this, again, helps folks in the operational folks do that next step to actually, use the study results to improve care. So the more information that you can gather on the so what and what next is really critical. Next slide. This is the list of RFAs we have for this cycle. We are offering 7 RFAs. There's the parent, the pilot, targeted suicide prevention, career development, the RTSP, social determinants of health, Alzheimer's and rural health. Next slide. And all of the RFAs can be downloaded from the VA-ORD intranet website, as you can see here. With that, I'm going to turn things over to Bob.
Thank you, Amanda. So we are unchanged for our Parent Merit Review Award. Again, it's $1,200,000 max for 4 years, And two resubmissions are allowed for this. And these are, we accept proposals looking at our priority areas, but we also will look at proposals. We accept and review and fund proposals that may not be directed to a priority area, but are an area of importance as identified by the investigators. And again, there's the link here for the HSR&D priority domains. Next slide, please. We also have pilot studies, which are $200,000 max and can take up to 18 months, and they are allowed only one resubmission. Next, please. So the pilot goals and next steps need to be very clear. I've seen where we will not fund a pilot project if it's not leading to something, if it's just a study on its own. Then we can have small innovative studies, as you see in one of the bullets, that do not necessarily lead to another IIR, but we still want to know, you know, where's this study taking us, as Amanda said, you know, what's the next steps? You know, what's going to become of this work that's not just a publication? But we have a number of pilot goals that are really in preparation for larger studies, quite often, but not always, clinical trials that we may be supporting. But we want to make sure that your methods align with the goals and that they are appropriate for pilot work. We tell the reviewers they need to be their critiques need to be appropriate for a pilot, but we are still looking for scientific and methodological rigor in here. So that's what they're looking for, along with, you know, where is the study taking us? So those are things to really consider when you're putting together a pilot proposal. Next, please. And finally, this is the targeted suicide prevention solicitation, and we've had this out for a number of years now, but it still remains a very high priority for us and for the VA. So we're continuing it. It runs under the same project limitations as the parent and pilot projects I mentioned. So you can come into the suicide prevention RFA as either a merit or a pilot. We'll take both under there. And they can focus on any kind of study, observational effectiveness trials, implementation studies, including, as Amanda mentioned, hybrid studies, population-based, community-level studies. We have lots of areas that we're interested in. They are detailed out in the RFA. We have particular interest in populations of veterans who are in transition from the military, maybe in transition from care in hospital care and patient care. And also a strong interest these days in lethal means safety. And one thing this kind of came to me as it was mentioned before with the implementation studies, that when you focus particularly on a hybrid study, do make sure you have expertise in all the necessary areas. So that would be expertise on the effectiveness study side and expertise on the implementation study side of that. And I know that panels will look very closely for that and make sure that the study will be done right. So that is it for me, and I will turn this over to Crystal. Has some good new information.
Thanks a lot, Bob. So as Tiffin stated earlier, the Rural Health RFA is new this cycle. So there's a $1.2 million max for up to 4 years. The RFA goals were developed from the Rural Health SOTA, or the State of the Art Conference that was held earlier this year. The meeting materials are available on the HSR&D website, and there's a link to those materials on the slide, so you're free to look at that. And also wanted to note that proposals that have been previously reviewed under other HSR&D RFAs will be accepted as new in response to this FOA/RFA. So as the initial release of this RFA, all applications will be considered new under this RFA. So this RFA that posted last week did not clearly state this. However, an updated version has been posted. So if you go on there to look at the info on the RFA, it should be posted now. And if you don't see it, if you don't see the most recent version, then you just need to clear your cache if you don't see it, and then you'll be able to see the updated version. Next slide. Okay, so with this RFA, the focus on the rural health RFA, the focus on priority areas and incorporating the four cross-cutting themes. The priorities are implementation effectiveness research to inform public health management of crisis and promote health equity. The second priority, rural veterans' decisions or preferences about where they receive care and the quality of that care. The next priority is innovations in infrastructure and human capital that can address disparities in rural workforce needs. And the cross-cutting themes for this particular RFA, the cultural context of the rural populations, obviously diversity, equity, and inclusion, innovations to improve access, and mental health. Next slide. So in terms of the Career Development Award and the Mentored Research, the next few RFAs are Career Development Awards. The Career Development Award is structured as Mentored Research. The application is 14 pages and it requires a letter of intent that has to be reviewed and approved before an ITS and application are submitted. The letters of intent for Mentored RFAs are due October 15th. If your letter of intent is under review, you may submit an ITS within the ITS window, but your letter of intent must either be approved or at least under review for the ITS acceptance. And also a summary of the award is listed on this slide for your information. And that's all I have. And I think at this point I'll switch it over. I'll hand the baton over to Lynn.
Thanks, Crystal. Okay, so I'm going to discuss a couple of career development and training awards that are specific to various topics and institutions, and then go over the calendar, and then we'll have time for questions. So if you can just rev up your attention for a couple more minutes, you'll be in good shape. So the first mechanism that I'm going to discuss is the Mentored Physician and Clinical Psychologist Award in Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. Just rolls right off the tongue. It's a career development award, and it has the same deadlines as the CDAs that we've described previously. You can see that a letter of intent is due October 15th. This award is a VA ORD cross service award. So it's eligible for HSRD applicants, but also for BLCS and rehab, and again, across the scientific spectrum. It's a 3 to 5 year duration. You can see the costs that are here. The key difference on this CDA from a lot of the other ones we have is that this program is jointly funded through the National Institute of Aging at NIH. And so applicants will need a VA mentor, as well as an NIA mentor that is, or a mentor that is NIA funded. This is listed, like I said, as a cross ORD kind of RFA, but it has some quirks. So please feel free to reach out to me if you have further questions about it. It's been renewed for 3 years and we have 2 cycles, winter and summer. Okay, let's go to the next slide and talk about the Minority Serving Institutions Research Scientist Training Program Award. Again, same date for the letter of intent. This is also a career development award, and it generally follows the format of our CDAs. However, there are a couple of exceptions. The award needs both a VA primary mentor and a minority serving institution co-mentor. The investigator must have attended a minority serving institution and must be affiliated with it as a lecturer or a postdoc or have a faculty appointment. And as you can see, there are several features of this award, including startup funding and career and mentoring plans. So this is also listed within HSRD announcements, and you can see that there are some of the details and reach out on those. So lastly, let's look at the calendar. So the fall is very, very busy for you if you're going to be submitting. So what you can see is these are the important deadlines for our RFAs. Particularly note that CDA letters of intent are due October 15th. That's the first deadline for all our RFAs. And then ITS opens October 21st and closes November 4th. Waivers have a deadline of November 10th. So if you're considering a waiver, you definitely need to reach out and have that have time to go through the process. And the new ITS involved personnel entry window is November 15th to December 14th. Down to the wire on grants.gov submission is December 8th. With verification deadline on December 15th. And all this goes to scientific merit review in March of 2023. And with that, I will hand it back to Kathy.
Thanks, Glenn. So right now we'll take some questions, and if you have them, or you're always welcome to send any questions you have to our scientific review mailbox, which is listed just under the question mark, and we can address any questions there as well. And as we mentioned earlier, all of the RFAs can be accessed at the ORD RFA website, which is listed here. And if you are interested in the query RFAs, you can register to attend the October 12th query RFA seminar, and the slides will link you to that registration. Heidi, let me see if I can see questions.
Yep, let me just start at the top and we can work our way through them.
Okay, thank you.
The first question that we have here, what do you mean by inclusion of videos? That was near the start of the session.
I'm not sure what's that referring to. Does anybody else have any?
I think that was about waivers. A waiver for videos, inclusion of videos.
Oh.
Is that because there are no links allowed in the
right
in the proposal?
Yeah. So if your study requires a video to be included, you'll need to request a waiver for that. The RFAs do discuss videos, but I would reach out to the SciReview mailbox if you're planning on including a video to get more information on those. Videos are not encouraged because we don't want you to try to overcome the space limitations that are imposed.
Great, thank you. The next question that we have here, why would you need an LOS from a PD or PI?
You don't need a letter of support from the primary investigator, but you would need a letter of support from a co-investigator or a site PI, because they're a co-investigator. And if you have a multiple PI, then you would
want to put letters in there from both multiple PIs.
It helps to ensure that people who you've listed on the study are aware of that. We've had cases in the past where people didn't know they were being listed as co-investigators or other roles in studies. And this requires that they actively sign a letter of support indicating that they know they're participating.
Great, thank you. I received a follow-up question on the waiver for inclusion of videos. So that's for inclusion of videos in proposal, not in study protocol. That's an important change and needs more discussion, please.
There has not been any change in the inclusion of videos in the application at all. It's the same as it has been. If you have to have a waiver from your scientific program manager to include any video in a application. And that video has to be submitted prior to the deadline for the applications. You cannot submit the video as part of the application. ERA will reject it. Tiffin, did you want to add anything to that?
Nope, I think that covers it, Kathy. Like I say, just make sure there is specific guidance in all of the RFAs about what you need to do if you want to submit a video, and it hasn't changed.
Great, thank you. And then a clarifying on the LOS. Are you clarifying that we do not need an LOS from the PI? We used to believe that, but recent RFAs seem to indicate that an LOS is needed from all investigators. So we have read that as needing an LOS from the PI.
Bob, you want to answer that one?
Sure. It's in how you interpret that, but we do not require a letter of support from the PI because they're the ones who are submitting the application. It's everybody else who is on the study to verify that they are agreeing to be part of the study. So we do not need that from the PI.
As the corresponding PI.
Correct. Okay.
That makes so much more sense. Thank you for clarifying that. Okay, the next question here. For the recommendation for the electronic signatures for the letters of support, I assume we will encourage VA letter writers to use their PIV certificate signature. Is there a preferred format for non-VA letter writers to provide an electronic signature? For example, should it have a date
timestamp? I'm going to ask Bob this one again. Or Tiffin.
You're getting me. I think a time and date stamp would be good. Hopefully they could do it in terms of a electronic signature on a PDF form. It's not necessarily a VA form, so that should work. Again, this is being done to verify that the individuals who are providing the letters are actually know that, understand that they're doing that. And this is actually in response to a situation where somebody found out that they were on letters of support that they did not sign. So we want to ensure that, you know, the people you are proposing to be involved in the study actually agree to that. So anything you can do to ensure that it's a valid signature and you know, electronic for us is the best, because that person should be the only one who can do that. Any way you can ensure that is a good way for us to understand. Note that it's not it's encouraged, not required this time, but it will be required in the future. So it's a good time to start to explore ways that you may be able to include people from non-VA sites.
Great, thank you. That is all of the questions that we've received in. For the audience, if you have any other questions, we have these great resources on the call. Please ask your questions. This is what this time is set aside for. We've got minutes left here that we can use for questions. Please type those questions in and we can cover those here. But that is all of the questions that I've received at this time.
Okay, thank you, Heidi. So, and we thank everyone that attended today. We hope that we have addressed your questions, but again, as Heidi mentioned, please send any additional questions you have into our scientific review mailbox. We'll be happy to answer them and get you the information you need so that we can review applications from you soon. So thank you.
We did get one question here. Oh, they're starting to come in here. Oh, hold on. Question. Are the LOs addressed to Dr. Atkins for HSR&D?
Yes.
And question regarding appendices. One of mine will be a very large over 100-page toolkit. Is this okay?
Tiffin, can you answer that one?
Yes, I would say it may have problems uploading when you're uploading the application into grants.gov. That is quite large, but I think it should be fine. If you have any problems, I think Heather, I see, just feel free, make sure you send an email to the SciRev mailbox and we'll address it. But I think I should be okay. I don't think that's oversized, but I don't know the exact size limit for grants.gov.
Okay, perfect. Can the date on the LOS be like October?
October of last year or this year? I guess I'm
just have October.
Yeah, I would like to see time and date with that.
Yeah.
Because one of the things we do say is that if you have a letter of support, it's good for 1 year.
Right.
So if you're coming in and it's beyond the year, if it's just October, we won't know when it actually was done and if it's an up-to-date letter of support or not. So I would say just to say October is not sufficient.
Okay. It looks like we are wrapping things up there. If anyone does have any other questions, please use the mailbox provided to send those questions in too. Thank you so much to our presenters for taking their time today. We really do appreciate all the time you all put into this. For the audience, when I close the meeting out, you will be prompted with a feedback form. Please take a few moments to fill that out. Thank you everyone for joining us for today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar, and we look forward to seeing you at a future session. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.